everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to spend time with you, sharing the latest high-quality information on how you can prevent disease and overcome that or improve in your condition, no matter what you have, using natural and non-toxic techniques. All of the information I share is from PubMed, the National Library of Medicine, where the finest peer-review, high-quality studies are published. So you can rely upon the information. Now, why this information is not provided to you on a daily basis by the mainstream media? I can't answer that. But we are the place that shares more information on health and healing and environmental issues than any other radio or television source in America. And we have a lot to share, starting right now. From the Natural Society comes a study about watercress. Why? Because anything and everything we can do to prevent or treat breast cancer is important. A new study from the University of Southampton indicates that watercress could be useful in the fight against breast cancer. The study was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. A compound found in virtually all the cruciferous plants, and let's go over that, because I believe you should have two servings a day. That would include broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, kale, watercress, of course, mustard greens, and also the radish family. These are all loaded with nutrients like indole-3-carbinol and isothiocyanates and other nutrients that are known to block cancer. So of all the fruits and vegetables you consume every day, and remember, the more fruits and vegetables you consume, preferably organic and ideally locally grown, even growing them yourself, and the more sprouts you eat and microgreens loaded with nutrition, the healthier you're going to be, the stronger your immune response, the longer you're going to live. So this new study from the University of Southampton indicates watercress could be useful in the fight against breast cancer. And this was published in the British Journal of Nutrition, as I mentioned. And when a tumor outgrows its own blood supply, it sends signals to surrounding tissue to deliver more oxygen and nutrients. It's these signals that the isothiocyanates in watercress actually shut off. And for the research, a small group of breast cancer survivors ate a bowl of watercress and then had their blood tested for a period of 24 hours. The participants had a significant level of isothiocyanate in their blood following the meal, and the signaling function was measurably affected. So that's important, especially at a time when we're seeing so many new breast cancers. In fact, we're seeing a lot of cancers, including people who had been in remission, and now they're no longer in remission. So that's important. It's always nice when I return to New York City, where I lived my entire adult life, plus living at the same time in the country on ranches or farms, where I am now, down in Southwest Florida, on an animal sanctuary, and taking care of animals that have been rescued. I've rescued over 5,000 animals of all different species, from giraffe to zebras and foxes and possums, you name it. I get them back to health and find them a loving, healthy place to live for the rest of their life. Well, when you're out every day and you're working on a farm, and let's face it, when you live on a farm or a ranch, you work. You're using all your muscles. Especially if you don't go to a gym, you start lifting 200 bales of hay, and each bale weighs 100 pounds. You're getting a workout. And you pound stakes in the ground for putting up fencing. That's a workout. But if you don't live in that environment and are working on your body every day, then go to a gym. Or create a little gym in your garage, your basement. But work out. Why? Because the Australian National University found that working out in a gym in later life could lower dementia risk. Now, right now, I have seven friends who are in their 50s and 60s who are substantially focused upon taking care of a mother or father, or both in two cases, where they just can't take care of themselves. They have dementia. Unfortunately, none of these individuals did anything in a healthy way, whether it was exercising or eating right or juicing or modified fasting or dealing with stress in appropriate manners during their life, because they never thought it would happen to them. And then one day it does. But it doesn't happen all at once. Early signs can start in your late 20s. You're actually in the aging part of your life at the age of 27 forward. Now, if you were one of those people in college did a lot of binge drinking or just drinking all the time, let's just say that you're 20. Chronologically, you're probably 30 biologically, because you've destroyed so many of the DNA. You've altered so many of the cells, and now they won't all come back, or they'll come back in a non-healthy way, like cancer. But that doesn't happen overnight. Again, that takes a lot of assaults and years, and then one day it tips. Now you're really noticing it. And one of the first things we notice is we notice a loss of short-term memory. Long-term memory can be there, but short-term memory. What did you just read last night? Well, you forgot. What was that person's name? You forgot. Where'd you put your keys? You forgot. Those are red flags that tell you you should be working on cleansing, rejuvenating, detoxifying your brain and your body. But we don't, because it's not a classic disease. It hasn't been diagnosed as such. After all, you're only 41 years old. You're not old. Well, in reality, you are. During the past 3 years, the life expectancy of Americans has dropped more than almost any country in the world. In fact, it's dropped more than any of the advanced first world countries. We're at the bottom of the pecking order in a lot of areas, including our health care. We've lost somewhere between 3 to 4 years off our life expectancy. You would have to go back to the early 1960s as far as where we've gone in increasing lifespan to where we now are reducing lifespan. So we were up around 78, now we're down around 74. And that's just an average for people who drink, smoke, or don't exercise, who are nutrient deficient, especially in vitamin C and D, and magnesium and calcium. They're going to be reaching their lifespan probably in their 50s. And so that's how we take it. We take people that live into their 80s and 90s, those who live into their 40s and 50s, and we average it out. So everything you can do to put time on your side, do so. It'll count. Maybe not today. You won't see it. After all, you're healthy. I remember in Central Park, we were running as a group in our Natural Living Running and Walking Club. And we worked with over 35,000 individuals. 32,000 did the marathon and finished every single one. But we would break into groups based upon the times we were able to race, walk, or run, and we would train in the park. It was wonderful. Great socializing, camaraderie, great support, everyone helping each other to do their workouts and races. But then you could see the difference. And one day, one of my buddies, who is one of the better runners in New York, always up there in the winning groups and running, and he's a lawyer and trim as can be, strong, fast, comes over to me. And he's standing there at the corner of 90th Street and 5th Avenue where we'd meet at 8 o'clock every Sunday morning, and have since 1975. Yeah, almost 50 years. And so he would listen. And then when I'd be running in the park in the morning during the week, I'd always see him. So one day he says, why do you call it the natural living? What's so natural about what you do? Well, why not just encourage your people to get into the Roadrunners Club or the Eastside Track Club or one of the clubs that train people to be very fast, elite runners? And I said, well, here's the difference. We're training thinking about the stress that running more than 3 miles puts on your body. It actually speeds up your aging process. And it certainly speeds up the aging of your muscles, especially your leg muscles. So you will feel fine today and probably next year and for the next 10 years or 15 years. But there'll come a time when your legs literally are up to the end of their lifespan for being able to do anything as far as fast running. You never thought of that. I said, so our diet is a vegan, healthy, plant-based diet. We run with meditation. And so we have a way when we get tired to join energy shoulder to shoulder, sharing energy. He didn't know what I was talking about. He said, I have no idea what you're talking about. Shoulder to shoulder, sharing energy. I said, yes. I said, if you want to see the power of energy, come this Sunday and you'll see it. So I saw him on Sunday morning and we started out. And we were about 11 months into our training with this new group. And so I said, all right, let's do the whip. So we ran single file around Central Park, and the person who was dead last then had to run as fast as they could to get to the front. And then the next person dead last would run to the front. This way it gave everyone a chance to do their speed work. And we then said, let's do it at 7 minute pace. Now this is what got him. I said, you see, I have no watch. I took my watch off, I handed it to him. I said, time this from right now when I say this mile, 7 minutes. I had no watch. So he clicked the timer, and when we ran from 90th and 5th Avenue down to 72nd Street, I said, time. He said, 7 minutes. He said, how in the hell did you do that? I said, we do every mile the same way. That's what makes us more holistic. We're the only holistic and natural running and walking club in America. And look at regular, normal, non-athletic people. Look at over 80 became the world's lead athletes. Sam Skinner, Sid Howard, Louise Nottage, the greatest female runner in American history. Thelma Wilson, still alive, still training, and winning in marathons, golds. I mean, every one of these people were among the best of the best. And why are they still racing at 80 and 85 and 70 and 75? Because they took into account that when you're training and you're eating and you're fasting and you're drinking juices and you're meditating and you're using your mind in a positive way, everything then works together. You're harmonizing health. But if you were just to have salads, well, I eat my salads. They even threw some sprouts in there. There's a radish in there. Isn't that one of those cruciferous things you said, Gary? Yes. But that salad is only one small piece of a much larger puzzle to life. But when you take in all the other nutrients, when you're getting your protein from hemp and from almonds and rice, brown rice, and split pea, and all these other sources, and soy, you're not overtaxing your kidneys and liver, creating urea and ammonium. You're not over-proteining your body. And when you eat too much protein, you create a side effect, brain fog. Your body has to get rid of that ammonia and excess breakdown of the protein, and you end up with gout or pains in the ankles. Frequently, the pain in the ankles, the pain in your joints, is from having too much protein. Purines build up. You get lactic acid build up. And then it feels like little shards of glass underneath there. But when you're eating healthy plant-based protein and not an excessive amount, that doesn't happen. So every Sunday we would meet and I would do a lecture, sometimes for an hour, on something they should focus on that week, something that would help them live a longer life and keep themselves from prematurely aging. Jump forward 40 years. From 1975, 85, 95, 205, 215, I don't see a single one of those thousands of runners, all nice guys and women that I used to see in the park, because they didn't do anything holistic to compensate for the stress and the premature aging that occurs when you exercise more than 3 miles a day. As a result, one of them, and here's the interesting part, the gentleman who was a great athlete hasn't raced in 20 years. Why? One day he went out to run, just a normal 13-mile run at a 6-minute pace, and he couldn't do 3 miles at an 8-minute pace. He didn't know what was wrong. Maybe he had the flu. Maybe something was out of balance. No study could show what was wrong. There was nothing wrong with his body. Nothing. No viruses, no bacteria. His chi was gone. When you overexert anything in life, when you overdo anything in life, the central life force is called the chi, and you just use it up. And so that's why we must always have rest, meditation, silence, and balance in our life. Green space, white space, blue space, being able to take time for ourselves. For some people, they think that would be selfish because they devote so much of their time and energy to other people's responsibilities. Even when that person can clearly do something for themselves, they're still doing it. And of course, then there's no time for themselves. They're fatigued emotionally and physically, but they just keep doing it. They have no chi. And think of how many couples, especially professional couples, who are smart, well-educated, overwork, because they're all trying to climb that mythical, euphoric ladder of success. The harder they work, the more they're going to be recognized by their peers, and the more essential they will seem for solving problems and helping people. And then one day they realize that the spark is gone. They're going through the motions. They're functional. They're able to live and work. But the energy is no longer there. I'm sure many of you right now know exactly what I'm talking about. When what used to be exciting, looking at someone and seeing the energy just flash between your eyes, the passion, the pleasure, the purpose of sharing that time with someone, thinking it would never end. But then when you start overworking, your energy that you're giving to a patient or to a person or to your job, that's your chi. It doesn't matter where you give it. If you overexercise, you deplete it. I depleted my chi. I was training and racing, winning every race in America, in the World Games, setting records. And I'd get a call, Gary, where's their race in the world? Well, there's a 20K in LA. Let's go out tonight so we're there tomorrow morning. We would do it. Yeah. 50 of us went to London to do the first London Marathon. We did all these first marathons, the London, the Waterfront Marathon, Jersey Shore Marathon, the Long Island Marathon, the Marine Corps Marathon, the Montreal Marathon, the Los Angeles Marathon, the San Francisco Marathon, and dozens more all over the world. We did them. It was wonderful. It was an irreplaceable moment in life. But life is about passages, the people in those passages, the relationship, what we share. And here's the key. As long as you're in a passage in life, appreciate that's the only time that's going to happen. You'll have other passages, but that passage with those people, don't take any of it for granted. Honor it. Honor the people who've gifted you by coming into your life. That's how I look at it. I look at each person who comes into my life as a gift. How blessed am I to have this? Now, sometimes it doesn't turn out that way. Okay. But the passion, the energy, you're sharing your chi, the excitement of being able to share and relate, that's the significance of relationships. Right now, we have a whole nation where a lot of those people, probably one half, are depressed. And a lot of those people are lonely. They're not in a passage where they're able to relate and share. Their chi is gone. You can regenerate your chi, absolutely, but that takes time and focus. That's for a different conversation. So when I saw my professional friend, we didn't hang out together, but when you meet people on the road every day and you say hello and you chatter for a few moments while you're working out, you create a bond. And he says, you know, I didn't know what the hell you were talking about, Gary, a long time ago when we had that conversation and I came to the club and I came out on the track to see what you were doing. He said, but you're absolutely right. Everyone I know, all at one time. We all worked out together. Every morning we were out there, and none of us know. That she is gone. You have to rebuild it. It won't rebuild itself. But if you're older, if you're over the age of 40, you're way past middle age. You're in the last segment of your life, unless you do something to change that. Can you? Yes. Just the information I'm sharing. But you can't just say, okay, Gary mentioned something. What was it? What was it? What was it? Ah, asparagus. No, no, no. Watercress. That was it. Let's just put some watercress. That's all I have to have. So once a week, I'm going to have a few sprigs of watercress because it doesn't taste that good. And suddenly I won't get breast cancer or something. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying put all the pieces together. Now that requires a different type of mental discipline. You got to get out of your lazy space, your comfort space. You got to be willing to say, I'm willing to change, repurpose how I'm living, eating, exercising, or not. And then watch your chi come back. Watch the passion for life and pleasure and creativity and hobbies and everything comes back. Like you open a door and suddenly, wow, this is back to the future. I have a whole new perspective on what I'm going to be doing now. I'm not going to sit around and watch stupid television and watch a society in decline and intellects in decline and passions in decline. No, I'm rejuvenated. Just want to share that with you. The more you do, the more you benefit. So, this study shows that if you start exercising, rigorously exercising in your 50s, 60s, and 70s, you can substantially lower your risk of dementia. And all those people I told you that my friends are taking care, that completely consumes every day of their life. Their own careers put on hold. Their social life gone. Right? Phone calls to friends. But could they help their parents? If they get start early enough and the parents are willing to make changes, yes. If not, no. That dementia only progresses. So you need to have a healthy weight. That's critical. You need to retain your muscle mass. You need to stimulate human growth hormone. Exercise does that. And you need to eat right, juice, and modified fast. You do those things, wow. You're going to see people who go through their 70s, 80s, 90s with no dementia. So that's just the latest on what's happening with health and healing. And remember, every morning you can get a whole printout coming up on your computer that all the stuff I share each day as I am doing now, you will have it so that if you want to go back and say, Gary said something, but I was driving, couldn't take notes. Now you'll have it. You can refer to it. You can create your own health library. Because I have an enormous health library, probably the largest in the world, as a single individual who has millions of studies. For example, I have over 500,000 studies on the biochemistry, the efficacy, the therapeutic dosage of vitamins and minerals and herbs. And so therefore, when I'm sharing information and in my clinical practice, you know, I can reach into that repository and then put together protocols that can make a difference based upon good science. So just go to GaryNall.com, that's GaryNall.com, and look under newsletter, and it shows you how to get that, all right? And it's free, and it can help you. And also my documentaries. I'm working on 3 documentaries as we speak. I intend to have 2 of those ready to premiere the first week of February when I return to New York. I'll be doing a premiere as a fundraiser for our sister station, WBI, where I've been for 45 years, approaching in the next 5 years, 4.5 years, 50 years on the station, half a century. It's a long time. And I fully support BAI and community-based radio. So I'll be premiering 2 of these films when I come back. They're hard-hitting, and I'm filming every single day. Today, I was filming earlier this morning. I got 3 more shootings to do later today around the world. Exciting films. Thank you all for taking the time to look at this health nutrition. For those of you who are going to be on for the entire program, we're going to take a break and come right back because we've got some really interesting material to share with you. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. If we have time, I'm going to share a segment with you about watch out for the U.S. dollar because China, Russia, Saudi Arabia are building a new currency, and I'm going to have an expert share that with you and why that will directly impact you. So that's coming up. Also, Putin just scored a knockout blow to Europe and the World Economic Forum. Clayton Morris, Redacted, will share about 4 minutes on that, and I'll explain why that is important. Also, foot-long blood clots, unlike any blood clots we've ever seen in history. Dr. Ryan Cole with Dr. Kelly Victory and Dr. Drew will discuss this in a two-part, possibly three-part series. And during all of this, you can call in and share your feedback, 888-874-4888. Now, here's a couple questions I have, and they're just questions, and I'd like to see your feelings about them. We only found out by accident when Gloria Nuland of the State Department, who handles much of those European affairs and was responsible, proven it's not conspiracy theory, we have the audio of her talking with U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine about the coup, that they spent $5 billion of our money without any of us knowing it, without members of Congress knowing it, at least most of the members of Congress, that they were going to do a regime change in Ukraine. They also not only did that, but they allowed the Ukrainian neo-Nazis to kill about 12,000 of Ukrainian citizens who live over in the Donbass area who are actually speaking Russia and believing in Russian principles. But at that time, they wanted to kill these people and did, with no complaints or objections in the United States. During testimony, she was asked, are there any biological weapons in Ukraine? And she said, yes. We at least know of 23. So I have a simple question. Why is it the mainstream media didn't make that headlines? Why does the United States have 23 biological labs? Were we not a signatory to a biological weapons treaty? Yes, we were. Is it against international law and treaty, which supersedes all national law, to violate it? Yes, it is. So we were violating treaty laws. We were engaging in the creation of biological weapons. And why Ukraine? Why no ally that would have taken money and allowed us to do it there? Great Britain, New Zealand, Australia. Why Ukraine? The most corrupt country in all of Europe. And now we're seeing reports from Monaco. If you've never been to Monaco, it's a beautiful place. It's only about the size, a little larger than Central Park. It's really tiny, and everything's expensive. It's being flooded by Ukrainians buying multi-million-dollar mansions. Where'd they get that money? Oh, and how is it that Ukraine Zelensky has selected BlackRock and the head of BlackRock to control all their investments? If a country's broke and should be spending money on its own people and infrastructure, and they're investing in BlackRock, in speculative, where'd they get the money? Oh, could that be all the money we're sending them that no one's accounting for? And all the weapons we're sending them that no one's accounting for? So why isn't there a question about what are we doing in these biological weapon labs? Why are we engaging in gain-of-function research? We're weaponizing viruses. Now, look what happened when one of those escaped. And I have no proof to the contrary that it escaped by someone being infected working in the lab, because the State Department previous investigation, and we have all those memos that were made public, said that it was a terrible situation. They were not following proper procedures for a biological lab. Our own government's saying, these people don't know what the hell they're doing, and they're doing it in a really unorganized and unsafe way. We didn't care. We just kept pumping money in. Anthony Fauci, for gain of function, he lied before Congress. He'll be held accountable. At least we'll know the truth when he's under oath. So, why is that not an important story? Why do we need gain of function research done all over the world? What do we intend to do with that? And if you think that these bacteria and viruses don't escape, we've just done a report. I'll be sharing it with you shortly, about how many dozens of escapes of bacteria and viruses have gotten out. Fortunately, they haven't caused pandemics. This one did. And yet, I see no questions about this before Congress or in the media. You know, that said, what if I told you that there are those highly qualified, highly respected investigative journalists who have found everything about Jonestown Massacre? Remember Jim Jones drank the Kool-Aid? And they all were laid out neatly side by side, laying on their children who had all drank cyanide. What if I told you everything you were told was not true? That these people were murdered by lethal injection in the back of the neck. What if I told you that Jim Jones was a part of the CIA and had been nurtured, and they were continued carrying on different programs, MKUltra, and those people just happened to be unfortunate guinea pigs? Sounds incredible? Sounds impossible? A week from today at the Progressive Commentary, I will be broadcasting an interview with all the documentation of this person who is the editor-in-chief of a major investigative reporting magazine, probably the best in American history. And I'll challenge him, and he'll have to lay out the proof. That is next Tuesday on the Progressive Commentary Hour, because I think it's important that we take a look at that. Also, I think it's important we support our sister station, WBAI. How do you do it? Easily, quickly, call a number and simply say you want to be a buddy. That way, each month, you give a little bit of money, and they are able to pay their payroll. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. They deserve to survive. That's one way you can help them. Now we're going to go to watch out for the U.S. dollar. This is a short clip. It's only about, I think, 8 minutes long. But what's important is what I'm going to be sharing with you that's happening now and almost certainly is going to happen in the near future. So if you have a mortgage on your house, if you're in the stock market, if you have equities and you have debt against them, you really should pay attention to what I'm going to be sharing with you, because this impacts everyone. And no one is sharing this information with you that I can see in the mainstream media in an honest way. Let's go to the clip.
U.S. dollar as the world's major reserve currency is in serious jeopardy. And now, even America's strongest allies are starting to voice their frustration. Joseph Borrell, the EU's High Representative for Foreign Affairs, recently stated, "Everyone has to follow the U.S. dollar, because otherwise their currency will be devalued. Everybody is running to increase interest rates, which will bring us to a world recession. The future of our world economy looks bleak, and as Europe continues to deal with the Ukraine war and the U.S. government continues its conflict with China, something must change. The change is well underway, and ironically, it involves one of America's biggest allies, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, who now wants to shift its allegiance from the United States and build ties with China, Russia, and India, three of the largest oil-consuming nations in the world. The U.S. government will do everything it can to preserve dollar hegemony, but Saudi Arabia will change the future of our global financial system when they formally join the BRICS alliance with China, a country whom they've stated will be the national priority for the next 50 years. Everyone, today's video is proudly sponsored by Wren, a new website that helps you calculate your carbon footprint and find incredible projects to fund to help offset your carbon footprint and make a difference in the world today. This company is truly changing the world, and I'm so honored to partner with them. Please watch to the end of today's video for a full breakdown of their incredible mission. Now, to understand how significant this move from Saudi Arabia will be, we must first learn a history lesson. In 1971, U.S. President Richard Nixon took the U.S. dollar off the gold standard to print more dollars to fund America's war in Vietnam. The switch to a fiat currency was an absolute disaster and wreaked havoc on the American economy. The U.S. dollar dove in value, oil prices began to skyrocket, and the U.S. needed a plan to save its currency. Enter Saudi Arabia. In arguably the most lucrative business deal ever brokered in world history, the U.S. convinced Saudi Arabia to sell oil exclusively in U.S. dollars. In exchange, the U.S. military would give Saudi Arabia military protection and make Saudi Arabia the most powerful nation in the Middle East. Saudi's biggest rival is Iran, and the U.S. would help cripple Iran's economy by imposing sanctions that still exist to this day. What a win-win for both Saudi and the United States. And this was the birth of the petrodollar, and how the U.S. government was able to save its currency and prolong the American century. That is, until China started making a major move in the world order. Perhaps the best illustration on how much the world has changed and how China has shaped that change is this graph here. At the turn of the century, only a handful of countries counted China as their top trading partner. The majority of the world depended on the U.S. But fast forward 20 years, and now the majority of the world relies on China as their top trading partner. Of course, the creation of China's Belt and Road Initiative has been a major catalyst for this change, with roughly 60% of the world's population now living in a country that is part of the Belt and Road Initiative. And as China's GDP continued to grow every year, so did China's need for oil and its own relationship with Saudi Arabia. Earlier this year, Saudi Arabia sent shockwaves around global markets when it announced that it was considering selling oil in Chinese renminbi. And when Saudi Arabia formally joins BRICS, it will guarantee that Saudi Arabia will break its deal with the U.S. and begin trading oil in other currencies, or simply use the proposed basket of BRICS currencies that will once again be backed by the gold standard. Saudi Aramco CEO stated last year that ensuring the continuing security of China's energy needs remains our highest priority, not just for the next 5 years, but for the next 50 years and beyond. Those are hard words for the U.S. government to hear, and America was dealt another difficult blow when Saudi Arabia announced it was cutting oil production by 2 million barrels a day. Analysts speculated Saudi Arabia made this move to spite the U.S. and purposely cause inflation to rise directly before Biden headed into the important U.S. midterm elections. Biden responded by threatening Saudi Arabia with unspecified consequences and even proposing passing the NOPEC bill, which would restrict Saudi Arabia from purchasing U.S. weapons. While the U.S. can appear tough on paper and try to threaten Saudi with unprecedented consequences, the reality is that the U.S. needs Saudi much more than Saudi needs the U.S. Proof of that was seen last week when the Biden administration granted immunity for the Saudi prince over his role in the killing of an American journalist in October 2018. Biden's gift of immunity for the Saudi prince has been called an act of weakness and political cowardice, and it opens the door for Saudi to begin working with other nations. The U.S. knows its relationship with Saudi is most likely not going to improve, and therefore has already implemented a new strategy to save the U.S. dollar. Just last week, the U.S. government miraculously lifted an oil embargo on Venezuela and granted oil company Chevron a license to pump oil in the country. The agreement stipulates using $2.7 billion that were previously frozen due to U.S. sanctions towards economic development, while requiring Chevron to exclusively export all oil from this new deal back to the United States. But the situation in Venezuela is actually very important to understand because it reveals one of the major problems with the U.S. dollar. Many countries are too vulnerable to U.S. sanctions and live under control of the U.S. government, who can simply open and close trade whenever it suits U.S. interests. This is why a move towards BRICS looks so enticing for Saudi Arabia and many other nations. Argentina has formally approached China to join BRICS, along with Iran, Turkey, Egypt, and 11 other different developing countries around the world. Participation in BRICS now signals a new world that is emerging beyond established Western dominance. BRICS currently represents 41% of the world's population and has a combined GDP of $24.4 trillion. And when the remaining countries officially join BRICS, over half the world's population will be part of the alliance. By using unnecessary sanctions and weaponizing the U.S. dollar, the United States has contributed largely to a more fragmented fragmented global financial system. Even back in 1971, John Connolly, President Nixon's Treasury Secretary, bluntly told a group of European finance ministers, "The dollar is our currency, but it's your problem." This comment is as valid today as it was then, and public opinion about America and the US dollar are shifting, even among European countries. This article from Politico states top European officials are furious with the Biden administration and now accuse the Americans of making a fortune from the Ukraine war. While Europe settles in for a long and hard winter ahead, maybe they can distract themselves by watching their countries play at the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. But this video isn't about football, and despite China not qualifying for the event, it just might walk away as the big winners in Qatar, as just last week, China signed a new 27-year deal with Qatar Energy to supply China Sinopec with liquefied natural gas and the longest such agreement to date. It's a huge step forward for China, who now has secured the one resource every country needs to develop their economy, and that is energy. Within 3 years, all the BRICS nations will have central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, and can trade bilaterally without the need of the United States dollar. Saudi Arabia can supply the BRICS network with crude oil, while China has locked in natural gas with Qatar. China is securing their energy needs for the next 3 decades, while Europe is still scrambling to obtain their energy needs for the upcoming winter. Again, the world is changing, and let me share with you my final thoughts. With the world de-dollarizing and countries looking for ways to trade in alternate currencies, alliances like the BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization are only going to gain in popularity in the future. The US is going to respond by becoming more aggressive towards China, and certainly Saudi Arabia when it formally joins the BRICS alliance. But the real question here is, can the US, China, and Saudi Arabia learn to coexist in this ever-changing and complex geopolitical world that we now live in? Well, I'm a firm believer that the future of mankind depends on it, and many of you who follow this channel know that I have a passion for the US and China, and firmly believe that for the world to win, both nations must put aside their...
Okay, so let me put it a little different way. No one is paying attention to the total debt the U.S. has, meaning the federal debt, the governments of the local community, state debts, personal debt, mortgage debt, even the derivative debt. And we are a nation that has never been this in debt. It's impossible for us to get out of this debt. There's not enough money in the world to cover $241 trillion of debt. That's how much debt we have. If you take in unfunded entitlements and non-funded entitlements and all of the different expenses we have, and we have a meager $22 to $23 trillion income, but that's not a true income, because only in the strange mind of corporate economists could they say that when a person cannot afford food, cannot afford rent, and have to pay for these expenses using their credit card, since when does someone else's debt become a part of our gross domestic product, as if this is from savings accounts, and therefore it's money that is not going to adversely affect a person when they spend it? So take $5 trillion away from that, and you see what our real, and then look at the money that is shown as part of our gross domestic product from Wall Street. Remember, right now, virtually everything in your life, or most everything in your life, comes from another country. Your radios, your televisions, most of your cars, certainly your cell phones, almost 90% of your clothing and shoes. Where do you think all this comes from? It comes from Bangladesh and India and Thailand and China and other countries. That's good for them. It's not good for us, because all this used to be produced right here in the United States. That's when we had full employment. That's when we had a standard of living that was the best in the world. Nobody had any debt back then, so to speak. We didn't have credit cards. We didn't have cell phones. But we had a sense of personal responsibility. And we prided ourselves. If we gave our word, we honored our word. We cared about ourselves, our family, our community, and our country. We were very patriotic. We were not perfect. Many of the things that we had overcome, many of the obstacles that we had challenged and won, set us on another step forward in conciliation, forgiveness, and understanding that all of our choices have consequences. But we were doing really well. And then came the vulture capitalist. Then came the equity partners. Then came the buyout kings. Then came the dominant forces that didn't want us making anything more in America, because why be bothered with unions and all the protections they give the workers, why be concerned about the environment? Why spend all that money cleaning up the environment? No, let's have this good made in another country where we can make it in China, ship it over in cargoes, ships, and sell it, retail it for less than what it would actually cost before to be made in the United States. So if it cost you $65 to make a bicycle and you can have it imported done for $50, who's going to buy a $100 bike when you add on the retail versus a bike for $50, half the price? So we saw the box stores, we saw the Walmarts and the Kmarts, we saw the Sam's Clubs. All of these emerged, and the very people whose jobs were sacrificed would go into these box stores and support them. There was no sense of consciousness about this. We were just massively consuming, much of which we didn't need. And yet the banks were happy and Wall Street was happy because now Wall Street was making money from money, not from factories, not from spreading a dollar around a community 80 times. Because when you had a brick factory in Parkersburg, West Virginia, my hometown, and the person who was a relative worked in that brick factory, and the brick factory had been there for decade upon decade upon decade. When you worked there, you had a living wage, you had protections, and then you took that money and part of your paycheck went to go to a movie or went to buy some clothes. Whatever you spent upon, it just kept circulating around the community. Today, when you put your credit card in, that goes to a corporation and it doesn't circulate in the community the way it once did. So then towns became rust towns, rust belts, and everywhere. And we haven't seen that change. Some cities like Detroit, near Windsor in Canada, some cities like Baltimore took areas and rehabilitated them, but they gentrified them. The poor people that were there, that were hanging on, they were thrown out. Now you had modern shops for people who wanted all the nice things you would find in any metropolitan city. But they didn't care who was there before and what would happen to them. They just knew that they wanted their downtown to be right. They wanted the right restaurants. They wanted like haberdashers, clothing stores, drug stores, banks. They wanted everything, movie theaters, comedy clubs. And they got it. The Upper West Side, where I've lived for my entire time in New York City, there was a time when there were parts of Broadway you didn't walk down at night, and certainly not Columbus because it was dangerous. But then it gentrified. And now you had all the modern convenience, the hip, the chic, the cultural. But nobody cared about where did people go? Where were they put? That was indifferent. Now what we have is we don't care how you make your money. If you're important, you're now a stakeholder. You're a policymaker. You get to go to Davos. You get to join the World Economic Forum. You get to be a somebody because your opinion matters. But you made your money over here exploiting cheap labor in sweatshops in Bangladesh. So how you made money enslaving women so they work at 28 cents an hour, that allows you to be a top person and get an invite to the Metropolitan Costume Ball each year? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we don't care how you made your money, unless, of course, it's cocaine or child sex trafficking. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, Jeffrey Epstein. Yeah, no, he was there. He was in everybody's, you know, best invite list because he had a lot of money. So you see, we've lost our way, and now we still had control because the dollar bought all this stuff. And if you couldn't buy it, you borrowed it. And so we allowed corporations, especially banks, mega corporations, to borrow unlimited amounts of money. But when it all went sideways, when their plans were stupid, when their PhDs in economics were idiots, when every bank in America, a top bank, went broke, we, the people who are never invited to give our opinion about anything, we had to give our money to get these jerks, these degenerates, back into a place so that they wouldn't lose any time to show up at their $500 plate dinner while we were eating canned food. I mean, just look at where this is not myth. I'm not exaggerating this. I did a movie on this, a multi-award-winning movie, and I'm doing a sequel, Poverty, Inc. I'm doing a sequel now, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Nothing has changed except it's gotten worse. We've learned no lessons. And so everything's pegged on that dollar. And the dollar's lost 99% of its value. And it could be okay because no other dollar was in around, no other currency around the world could equal it. Because we were the dominant force economically and politically. Until BRICS, Brazil, major industry, India, China, Russia, South Africa, and they started forming their own mixed currencies. Yeah. Let's trade in our currencies, not the dollar. And now Saudi Arabia has joined them, or is about to sign to join them. And they're a major player. But then so are almost 65 other countries wanting to be a part of BRICS. Well, suddenly you've got more than two-thirds of the world's population on your side. You're trading in that currency, and that currency is backed by gold. And we don't have anything backing ours. It's a fiat worthless currency with nothing behind it, and the illusion that we're powerful because of our economy. Our economy, except for those mercenary economies, is in the dumps. You don't even count all the people who've lost their unemployment as unemployed. They just don't exist. But there's 120 million of them. Doesn't matter. It does matter. If you took the honest measurement of how many Americans who once worked, would like to work, could work, and don't have jobs, your unemployment figure is closer to 25%. And your inflation rate is not 8%. It's closer to 22%. And some items are as much as 50% more. Look at how much more you're paying on rent. And how about food and clothing? Everything is more expensive. So how do you keep it one figure? It's not realistic, but nothing that the government tells you is realistic. So the day comes, and it will, when the mixed currencies, the dollar, because the dollar is not the only currency, you also have the Canadian dollar, you have the Swiss franc, you have the euro, the yen, you have the British pound. When those currencies dominated by the dollar, when now they're competing against a huge amount of nations who are working together, who are building cities and transportation hubs and giant manufacturing facilities, employing millions of people, by China giving out trillions of dollars in loans to make superhighways and gigantic docking places to offshore their cargo, and they're building hospitals, and they're building schools. Now, the Chinese have a lot in the game. They have a lot of control. But we're building missiles, and we're building air bases, and we're interfering in their politics. And that doesn't help the local economy except the immediate vicinity where the bases are. So which one do you think is going to win out here? Already within the next 2 years, the BRICS economies will exceed those of the United States by a substantial margin. Their currency will then be traded amongst them instead of the dollar as a reserve currency. Watch the dollar plunge just boom, right down like a brick, because there's nothing backing it up. You know, you can live in the cool world of the woke shamers, which is a pure illusion to reality. And one day that person's no longer on a college campus. One day nobody gives a damn what you think about a pronoun or who you think you're talking to. And they're going to talk that New York talk back at you, or they're going to let you know what they feel, and you have no place to go. There's no room on the street that is set aside for people who need to be hugging a teddy bear, having a psychologist, calling their mother, talking with their shrink, and all the while, you know, eating a pound of sugar cake. That doesn't exist in the real world. You have reality that we're all faced with, but not these spoiled brats, the identity politics, and those people. Those people don't see it coming and won't. The rest of us, it's coming, and we're smart if we get out of equities, unless you own it. If you own your house, you own something, you don't have debt, fine, good. But get out of debt, people. Stop buying what you can't afford and don't have the money for. Because when the dollar drops, and it will, that's inevitable, and when we are faced with all the debt that we have cannot pay, we just keep printing more money. And what happens when you print more money? Inflation goes through the roof. And you're seeing that now in Europe. Most of the banks are bankrupt. The government's bankrupt. Why? Because they borrowed from people's retirement pensions to spend money, including sending it to Ukraine. How long do you think you can do that before someone actually wakes up? Not one of these bought and paid for economists that work for the Federal Reserve that didn't see the 2008 crash coming. Wasn't it Greenspan who said, gee, we have all these thousands of PhDs. No one saw it. Not true. Anyone with a brain saw it. When school teachers could own six houses because everything was going up, going up, going up. Well, it all comes down, and it's coming down now. So pay attention, people. Gold, silver, assets that you will increase in value, not decrease. Your car's going to decrease in value. I don't care if you have a Lamborghini. In fact, the bigger, the more expensive the car, the more it will depreciate. Save your money. All right? And I'll give you more on this on an upcoming show. Your time to call in and share something of your views. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And by the way, I've been filming all of my morning shows, and I film it, and then we post those up. And so you can watch them. If you want to watch them, go to GaryNall.com, and you can drop down and see the films. All you have to do is go to PRN.live, PRN.live, click shows, then click all show archives, and you'll see Gary Nall's show notes, and that's where you'll see the video streaming that we're doing on all this. So if we get some calls, I'll be happy to address them. You'll have a chance to share your point of view on this. So everything you've been taught about basic economics, our parents got it right. Don't buy what you can afford. We've been living as a nation addicted, just like a fentanyl junkie. We've been addicted to debt. Well, stop. And another thing concerning the environment, I'm opposed to the environmental movement today in its entirety. I don't believe in any of these people. I believe they're either very stupid or they're simply deceptive because they're part of the money train where all that money goes does not go to where it should go. If you want to save the environment, if you want to help reduce global warming, if you want to clean up the oceans of plastic, if you want to stop the acidification of the oceans, which affects hundreds of millions of people who live around the world who rely upon the fish who are dying off in massive amounts because of the heating of the ocean and the loss of the coral reefs because of sun bleaching and the acidification of the water and all the other things that are happening, the desertification of half the United States or nearly at least a third of the United States, and that's not going to change. That's forever. So if you continue to want to have a quality of life, you've got to pay attention, get your head up and look ahead and see that the only way this is going to work is not by building more wind and solar farms. And I'm going to go into great depth about that tomorrow. I'm going to give you the actual technology that shows you cannot have what we're doing now, and especially in Germany, you cannot have solar and wind because of how much coal and gas it requires as the backup, in effect, the batteries for this to work. The same way with an electric car. You think electric car doesn't destroy more of the natural minerals and resources, create more pollution than what the car will save in carbon emissions over its lifetime? A windmill blade lasts about 12 years. Well, what about all these gigantic tens of thousands of used up and broken down windmills? They're just garbage. They're not even recycled. There are windmills now that don't have blades, and those I support. And there is solar coming where it's a different – it's here now, actually, but it's not using the solar panels. It uses mirrors, and thousands and tens of thousands of these large mirrors, all controlled by an algorithm that measures the sun and exactly where the tilt angle should be on the mirror. So all the mirrors are facing the sun. The sun hits them, and all that heat that the sun generates through the mirrors goes through cables into a giant generator. The generator gets to the temperature of about 1/3 the degrees of the surface of the sun. It then creates a non-polluting energy, and that is not being discussed in the general public. That's one viable option, but the most viable option we have is wind power. It's non-polluting to create, and it's non-polluting in its use, and it can last forever because the waves are never going to stop. And also geothermal. We have massive geothermal around the United States, and we could follow the model of Iceland that uses it to keep its streets de-iced, its homes heated. And it's, in effect, it's a free energy once it's installed, and it's forever, and it's non-polluting. But single most important thing we could do is ask people worldwide, stop buying stuff, all right? Stop buying all the things you don't need. You may want them, you may desire them, but if you don't need it, don't buy it, because it's our massive consumption that is the core problem. And the mindset that allows you to believe that somehow you're a better person, a more happier person, more joyful if you buy something you want, versus simply saying, do I really need that? The answer is no. And if we can do that, if we can have a message to people to stop buying, well, hold on a second, Gary, that's not going to happen. Why not? Because who's going to want to stop buying stuff? Do you think all those millions of young girls who are looking at Greta Thunberg, great little actress, except when you see her in real life and look in the back of her car, as the guy did at a lecture, and inside she was lecturing with that determination and making everyone feel guilt, really spreading the environmental shame around. But in the back seat of her car was just mounds of junk food, or showing her, you know, in the, not showing her in her first class train ride, but sitting on a floor like that. Oh, poor Greta, let us get together and buy you a seat. Or that multi-million-dollar yacht that she came across the Atlantic, as if somehow being on that yacht saved, you know, saved the environment because she wasn't flying on a plane. Well, we did the actual calculation of how much energy that yacht used in its fuel to get her across. She should have taken the plane with a lot of other passengers. Just everything we're doing wrong. Real environmentalists would have known that every state should be planting at least 100 million trees and some up to a billion. They're doing that in India. Why can't we do it? Right? There are ways that we could reclaim the deserts to make them sustainable again. We're not doing it. Australia's already done it. New Zealand's already done it. We're not doing it. And just individuals, not government experts and bureaucrats, individual farmers figured out how to take a completely dry, desolate terrain with no grass, just weeds, and suddenly a year later there's water, there's a pond, there's grass growing, trees growing, shrubs growing, and then it just kept expanding and greened up a whole valley. How did they do it? Common sense, no bureaucrats. You don't want to solve a problem, get a bureaucrat involved. So we have to look at the world as it is, and then we have to ask, who's going to be the person to say, yeah, I'll give up buying a lot of clothes I don't need, or I'll give up, you know, overstocking my refrigerator, I'll buy what I need and can eat, and otherwise I won't. So the real way that we change, we're not willing to address, because we don't trust that the average person is selfless enough. They're completely selfish. They only give a damn about themselves. And if you can show me where they went out and demonstrated on behalf of the poor, let me see that. Well, we haven't. And how about those who were once in a home and now are not? And living in a street. I'll show you in California where if you have an RV and you want to park on the side of a street, they throw you out. So where is our compassion? Oh, it's a metaphor. It's not real. That's correct. We're out of time, everyone. Tonight, the Progressive Commentary Hour. Don't miss it. Have a nice day. Stay tuned for Mutrice Lead right now.